Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is for, the 12th?
It's the 12th.
Yeah, it looks like it. We're moving right along.
Yep. Very exciting. We missed a week, so the world didn't happen. There was no news.
No.
Nothing at all. But we did see today that oil surged above $42 in hopes of a production freeze again. Saudi Arabia and Russia were the news that said something about, well, we're going to talk about a production freeze, and there's a meeting coming up on the 17th. This has been an ongoing process trying to get oil to pop off the bottom. We saw a big drawdown last week. Each and every week, there's a inventory report that comes out and tells how much oil was added to the inventories or subtracted. And for a long time, it's been kind of growing. And inventories are pretty much at the peak right now. But last week, we saw like a 4.5. I think it was actually 4.5 million barrel drawdown. And the rig counts keep on dropping. Short sellers are getting squeezed, and equity markets weren't that happy last week. But this week, they seem to have come back. We got some pricing charts. If you take a look at that oil surge chart. You see that?
Oil surge chart.
Let's see. All these things are available, the charts, et cetera, the notes on DH Unplugged. So if you go over there, you can check out all these things that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a pretty straight line.
19.5% gain on oil since the 5th of, what are we talking about here? The 5th. That's a week
ago. My birthday.
It was a week ago.
Yeah.
19.5% gain on oil.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it sounds rigged.
Oh, no pun intended. And you did have a birthday. You were actually, I saw that you were in New York.
Yeah.
You went to Sparks.
Went to Sparks.
What did you think?
I like Sparks. I've always liked Sparks. They have the best wine list. What they do, people don't realize, Sparks, what they do is they buy the wine when it comes out, and they store it for anywhere from 6 years to 20. And then they release the wine into the restaurant and mark it up based on the original prices that they paid.
So in other words, if the wine, let's just say they bought it for $5 a bottle.
Which is unlikely.
But if they did, they'll mark it up, let's just say, I'm just picking a number, to $20 a bottle. When in fact, that wine maybe somewhere else is $50 a bottle. Is that what you're saying?
In fact, the wine we had was probably a $250 wine and got it for $130.
Wow. That's a bargain.
Most of the wines on their list, you can't get as cheap as you can. You can't get them as cheap retail if you tried to find them as you can buy them there. It's always been that way.
And we're talking about New York here.
Anyone who knows anything about wine knows that Sparks is the steakhouse you go to if you like wine.
How was the steak?
Steak was fine. It was good.
Very good.
It was a big filet. They don't have them. I was disappointed. They used to have the thing called the petite filet.
Yeah.
And so instead of that, you just have to get the filet. And it's not just like a filet that you expect to get. It's a giant piece of meat that is about 3 inches high and a filet size from some big animal. And it's way too much food.
So you took it home?
We took a bunch of it. And Mimi, Mimi ended up with it.
So I know that you also met some people up there. You had a little bit of a after party.
We had a no agenda meetup in the bar.
Mm.
The restaurant was quite happy to see that because it livened up the place, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a nice one. I've been there once or twice. I thought it was good. I mean, I thought it was excellent. It's a traditional steakhouse.
No, it's a very traditional steakhouse. There's nothing, you know, going on that's other than it's traditional. I mean, they get the cream, spinach, you know, all that sort of thing.
Right.
And good meat. Great service, nice room. I mean, you can't go wrong.
I'll tell you, the one thing that I look for to rate whether it is a traditional and a quality steakhouse or not is if the waiter uses one of those little curvy metal things to sweep the crumbs off the table,
yeah,
that's a good place to go.
Well, I don't know if that's...
There's a correlation there. Because every time I've been somewhere that has it, it happens to be good.
Sparks, they bring out some waiter and he licks the crumbs off the table. It's very odd.
Good service. So that's good. So you had a good time in New York. It was kind of cold, right?
It was very cold, except for the first day. The first day was beautiful. It was like dynamite. It was like one of those New York perfect days.
Yeah.
And then it just turned cold, and then it got bitter cold. It was like 26 one day.
Yeah. Crazy weather. And then it got warmer again. I was in New Jersey this weekend. And actually, you know what? I flew into Philly. I stopped by a place that was on the way for a Philly cheesesteak sandwich, which was okay. But we got these Philly pretzels. Have you ever had these Philadelphia pretzels, the Philly pretzels?
Never heard of them.
I didn't either. But seemingly, they're very big there. It's a soft pretzel. It's like a pretzel, but they smush it. It's kind of like smushed down. Instead of a giant figure eight, it's kind of like more of a rectangle. And they're very good, very soft, very juicy, very good. Mm. But it was cold. I saw some snow on Saturday.
Well, luckily it never snowed where we were there.
Well, let's talk about what has happened since then. We did see that earnings season began this week with Alcoa. A lot of people are of the mindset like, oh, Alcoa used to be the important beginning of earnings season, and now it's not so much anymore, but it doesn't matter. Alcoa is the demarcation point of when earnings season starts. Whether it's an important company in terms of the overall economy or not, or we just say, it's a has-been company. Fact is, date-wise, it's the beginning. So the company beat by 3 cents. Estimates were, beat by 4 cents. They had 3 cents to the positive side they were estimated to have. Revenues missed, and they guided down, aluminum production for the year, which is really interesting.
Huh.
Because you think about all the things that are involved in big ticket and mass aluminum production, whether it's planes and aerospace and defense industry or automobiles, et cetera. I mean, supposedly these are selling like gangbusters.
Yeah, building materials. There's a lot of stuff.
So where's everybody getting all the materials from? Not Alcoa.
I have no idea. Recycles? I don't know.
But they did guide down, and markets didn't really care too much. We do have the start of the big banks reporting. We're going to see JP Morgan coming this week, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. So, and then next week it starts to roll in, some of the techs come in, and then next week after that it gets very heavy. So right now the big question is whether or not the fundamentals match the technicals.
Right? You know, it's as if every 3 months we go through this.
Well, that's because we do.
Oh.
Funny thing that it is. You know, there's some calling for companies not to report as often. Because it does, well, on one hand, I think it's important because we find out what they have to say backwards, what happened, and what they think is going to happen moving forwards. So that's important. That's a six-month period. But a lot of people saying, well, it's too often. It creates too much volatility. You know, investors now are looking at too much of a small view, not the big picture, because they're just waiting on these quarterly earnings. I don't know. It seems like quarterly earnings is a reasonable thing to, you know, reasonable time period in between 3 months to report what happened. Not base the entire year on that, of course, because the seasonality, there's things that happen, but, you know, at least get an idea from the companies what's going on, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I don't know what they're talking about. Anyway, the banks are going to start reporting. We did see already some big banking news this week. Finally, only since, what are we talking about, 2008, 2009? Finally, Goldman Sachs is being forced to pay up for their part in deceiving investors about the mortgages that were sold and all the different packaging and all the things that went on with their mortgage process. $5 billion.
Wow.
I was reading today there's actually some caveat where they only have to pay $4 billion. But nonetheless, the news was $5 billion. And guess that? The stock was up.
Oh. No, that's because it's been resolved.
It's been resolved. $5 billion. So, there was a time that $5 billion cost would sink a company.
Yeah, no, those days are over.
Yeah. It's like a $50 slap on the wrist for you or I.
Yep, you know? Pretty much.
So Goldman Sachs, I guess, admitting, they have to do a few other things too. They have to kind of, I guess, put out some kind of a letter saying, yeah, we did this, et cetera. But it's amazing. Do you imagine the not only the cost, the $5 billion penalty they have to pay, but the can you imagine the legal bill on this?
No.
I mean, years. And years and years and years.
Yeah, and they charge by the hour.
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's going to be resolved. We'll see how that plays out in terms of the forward guidance of their earnings moving forward, because we've already seeing a lot of banks complaining that trading revenue is down. There are a lot of firings going on in the fixed income department, in the trading department. Some companies are pulling out of certain countries, their entire operations recently. So banks are not seeing the best. As a matter of fact, we're still seeing the downstroke of price on the banks in the European area. I think Deutsche Bank hit another low today.
What's it at now?
It's 15 something. You had it. You made some money on it, but I think that that got stopped. Oh, I know that got stopped, actually. Tesla. Now, this is something that happened when we were on hiatus. The Tesla Model X came out. The Model 3 came out. Pardon me.
Model 3, which is, represents the E in the three things, S, E, X.
Oh, is that what it is? Good. Yeah. I like it. What do you think of the car, the whole, your impression of the vehicle?
I'm not that impressed. I mean, I think their design is still based on the S, only it's like, you know, kind of not quite as sporty looking. The S is really the best looking of the group, because I think it's because that character Fisker designed that, and these guys are just deriving from that original design. So it's starting to deteriorate in so far as its looks.
Right, the classical look of, or the modern look of the command center, that's that giant computer screen on the car, the original one that was out, right? It's been replaced by this 15-inch screen that's kind of popped out a little bit.
Right.
So it's not as smooth and the lines are a little bit different. But it's only 35,000 base, 350,000 models, 350,000 units were quote-unquote sold, or at least deposits were taken on those, only $1,000, and you don't have to keep it. So that's pretty impressive. The biggest question is going to be, how are they going to produce these cars? They're only putting about 50,000 or so on the market each year now, right?
Yeah.
And they have 350,000. Now they have that new Gigafactory.
Well, the Gigafactory, what Gigafactory? Isn't that for batteries?
Well, it could be batteries, but maybe they can use some of it for this production. They have to do something. If they're going to try to produce 350,000 cars over a reasonable period of time, people are not going to wait 6-7 years to get a car.
No.
Already they're talking about 2017. I mean, that's already, you know, the end of 2017. That's still a long time to wait.
It's too long.
I mean, people will be like, you know, what happens
if... I get a Chevy Volt. The new Volt is, I think, very attractive.
Yeah, and what happens if somebody's lease runs out, they need a car, or... you know, they decide that their car breaks down. You know, they want to buy this now. People, they're not going to have, listen, there may be more people that go into the opportunity to, you know, buy a car. Like they may wait and wait and wait. And then when it's available, buy it. And some people may drop off from the deposits, but still tremendous amount of interest. One of the reasons is, and somebody wrote me about this just today or yesterday, that you get this tax credit. You get like a $7,000 tax credit. And I think
you get the credit. You get the credit off your income taxes,
yeah,
or is that because
yeah.
I know Tesla gets some money for producing these
they
cars.
They get money as well, but those are running down a bit. They're on a slope down on their credits.
That's probably why they're dropping the prices too.
But if you get a $7,000 tax credit, or even a $6,000, but a $7,000 tax credit, essentially, depending on your income level, it's like a free car.
But do you get a $7,000 tax credit with a Volt?
I think so. Somebody was wrote me that they got a $7,000 or whatever the exact number was on some electric car that they have. I don't think it was the Volt. It was something else. But yeah, they got the tax credit. I put that out there. We talked about this and somebody wrote me in. Yep, got the credit. If that's the fact, why not just buy this car?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just buy the car and stick it in a garage or resell it to somebody. I don't know if you get to keep the tax credit with that.
Well, that's an interesting point.
And then,
just
of course,
turn it over.
Yeah, and then not to mention that many of the initial deposits, let's say you're the first 5,000, people rushed in to get deposits because they'll just then sell their place in the line to get the car. That's going to probably be some kind of like nice lottery ticket. So if you now want to buy a car and you have to wait till 2018, let's say, but you could talk to somebody and say, you know what, you put down the 1,000, I'll give you $5,000. To give me your place in line for number 1,000. I'll get one of the first cars out.
Yeah, you're scalping.
Yep. You know, there's somebody or somebody company doing that.
Absolutely.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Where there's money to be made, somebody's involved.
Huh.
Yep. All right. So, were you going to possibly buy one? Would you buy one? If you get it right now.
If I was going to get anyone, I've tested a lot of these cars. If I was going to get anything, the only car I would get would be the Volt. I think maybe one of the European cars might qualify in this regard, but you need to have a little motor in there. You just do. Otherwise, there's a name for this too, and I've experienced it. It's not comfortable, where you're just fearful that you're going to run out of juice.
Ah.
And it's white knuckle time, and it's just, it's not pleasant. It's so unpleasant that I wouldn't want to get an all-electric car that didn't have a little motor in it.
BMW makes a new sports car, although it's about $120,000.
Well, the little sports car you don't see over here, but they do have this horrible-looking thing. It's like a sedan. It's like Dorkmobile that they have that's electric. I've talked to a couple of people about it and seen a few of them. There's a bunch in Berkeley.
Well, the BMW sports car, that's the hybrid, but it has a small gas tank, and that gas tank runs like almost like a generator charging the battery. And it's beautiful. Well, it's pretty cool looking. And it's like, I think it's over 120,000.
Yeah, it's a little high.
Yeah. But now the bigger problem that Tesla's having, now on top of the fact that, well, hey, everything's great, the stock is just riding high, and we may have these production problems, but who cares? We'll figure it out. At least we got the orders. They just announced a recall of 2,700 Model X cars.
Which I guess is all of them.
So they got some problems with something, but you know.
Apparently, the back seat isn't anchored correctly. So if you get into an accident, the thing snaps off and you go flying through the front window, or something like that.
Kind of like an eject button.
Just some engineering
little defect. Problem. So they're gonna have to get their workers on that, and they just also did Tesla also did a raise of funds, a fundraise. To bring in more money. I guess they need more money to, I don't know.
Well, they've got the plant, the old General Motors BOP plant, the Buick Oldsmobile Pontiac plant, which was then became UMI or something like that when it's a huge plant. When it was taken over by Toyota, there's some joint venture, and then it shut the plant down, and then Tesla got it at a song, good price. And there's enough room in there to put up more lines.
Right.
There's no doubt about that.
Well, we'll see. It's going to be a very interesting venture, especially if, they do start to, their market cap is as big as the big boys at this point.
Yeah, which is laughable.
Switching real quick to the global expansion or lack thereof, the IMF fund, there's just something about the IMF fund and Lagarde and how she handles herself and some of the backhanded work and it's something about the IMF that just really rubs me the wrong way. But nonetheless, they see the world GDP expanding now at 3.2%. They're downgrading it again in 2016 and 3.5% in 2017. Now, they have a very poor record of forecasting. There's no question about that.
And yeah, for one thing, they can't figure out what China's going to be doing, and China's like a big part of this number. It's just like China's going to do very well and nobody else is.
Yeah, well, 3.2% is quite low compared to, for the whole world. Right now, I think we're on GDP track, U.S. For the first quarter, 0.4.
Ooh.
Yeah, first quarter, 0.4. Keeps on being ratcheted down a little bit with each of the various indicators that come out, et cetera. So we'll see how that plays out. Right now, the dollar is now at, I think it's a 8 or 9 month low. So that move that we saw, that dramatic move that was happening with the dollar, it was rallying, and it was, as things were getting bad around the world, there was a safety haven type of move going on. Well, that's been reversed. Maybe not so much because of the thought of safety, but just, the U.S. economy is not as strong. But the bonds are still being bought like crazy. As a matter of fact, we've hit some pretty low numbers the last week or so with the U.S. 10-year. I think 175 or 170.
So it's outrageous.
big thought that there's going to be a continuation of the Fed being very, very accommodative.
The 5's at 121, the 10's at 178, the 30 is at 260.
And that's because the 10 went up a little bit. I think it was at 165 last week. It's that time. Let's talk about the DH Unplugged Closest to the Pin competition. We have some winners. There was two that passed during the weeks that we were away. U.S. Steel and Michael Kors. Now, U.S. Steel has been rallying like for weeks now with no end in sight. I mean, it's amazing how much this thing has moved. And the final stock price on this was $16.55. The average entry of all of our listeners was $14.98. That's pretty far away.
Yes.
You know, on average. And that was just with, even if somebody just put the price in as of the date it opened or the last day, I mean, you still were off by 10% or 12%. So the winner of this was Omar. He came in at, let's see what he came in at. Omar came in at, I don't have that listed. He came pretty close though. I don't have that number listed here. He was relatively close to the number. Oh, actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, Omar was exactly on. He hit it exact.
Oh.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good, Omar. So we sent him a nice little gift. And then we had Michael Kors. Michael Kors didn't really move very much. It came in, we came in at the first, the winner was David H. Second place was Andrew, me. That was good. We were pretty close to that. And he was about 0.5% away. Not too bad. So we sent him a t-shirt, et cetera. Now you can check out all the closest to the pin. This is where we get our audience participating in the show and what we do. And basically what it is a guess on the price of a particular stock at some date in the future. Currently we have Transocean, which is the company that is involved in oil and exploration and rigs. And they are currently the, it is running is the guesses are closed, but GoPro is open for your guests through Friday when we'll announce another stock. And this is your opportunity to play along with us. How you like that?
You were way off on X.
I know, way off, way off, 18% way off. I thought when I looked at, I put it in at support. Basically, I put the price in at support, just never saw it. I mean, this stock has been running. Just take a chart, look at a chart. It's been, I mean, running.
Buyout candidate.
Even with Alcoa coming in light and guiding
buyout
lower.
Buyout candidate. Something's going on.
Either that or there's just the thought that China's going to be starting to ramp up their commodity cycle again and start buying things like crazy and building up their copper and their steel and all that. Steel production in some of the areas, some of the smelters and the production areas have been closed down. So that's one of the issues.
Yeah, well, Tata in Great Britain was a big deal because they had to shutter the place.
Right. The big problem. So now you close them down.
The Indians bought it. I don't know what they didn't know what they were doing. And the thing, Great Britain will not be producing steel.
Right. So that caused production limitations. So, you know, I guess it goes to X. Go over to dhunplug.com. There's a button there somewhere that says closest to the pin contest, and you can follow along. And each and every week what happens is once the contest guessing part where you can guess the price on a certain date is closed, what we have is a running tally of who is closest that updates on a regular basis. It's very cool. So check that out.
Yeah, that is very cool, I have to say.
Okay, this is something. There is something, the few things we have to talk about. The rest of the show is going to be, I think, kind of interesting. Because we got to start with the big, big, big issue that happened last week or so. Whereas the U.S. government put out some planned regulations to stop or inhibit inversions. This is where companies of the United States go and merge or buy or get bought by a company outside the United States. And what happens is then they could take all their profits offshore.
Yes, they get bought by some other company outside the United States. Wink, wink.
Right. Exactly. So what happened was in response, immediately, Allergan, which was going to be merging with Pfizer, was busted. Yeah. Allegan stock dropped off a cliff. So now all of a sudden, the question is, how much more aggressive is the U.S. government going to be in trying to put down their long hand or long arm on corporate tax avoidance? Because there's, you know, it's interesting. So as a U.S. citizen, you and I, we can make money. And if we put money somewhere else in the world and some investment somewhere, or maybe we have a business somewhere else, you know, kind of we, or, you know, that we get some income from, we have to basically pay tax on all of our global income. But corporations don't yet.
Right. You not only have to do that, but oftentimes you have to pay taxes to the country of origin and the United States.
Right.
So it's not worth doing it.
Right. And you can't hide money. In the U.S., there's rules about hiding money.
Well, you used to be able to. You can't hide money anymore.
Not anymore.
And then, of course, they just busted these guys in Panama.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's unbelievable.
And that's just a hiding money operation. And this is a shot across the bow, as far as I'm concerned, because that's not even the biggest of those operations.
So the big question, and I guess what's been raised on this whole regulation to inhibit these inversions, and of course it happens well past the bulk of inversions that were done already.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well past. This is true. Yeah, the cow's already been long out of the right. barn, and it's now, like,
has everybody done their inversions?
The plan? One would have been huge.
It was almost like, has everybody finished with the inversions? Because if you did, we're going to put down regulations to stop them. But it also begs the question of how this is going to potentially inhibit businesses and the thinking of boards and management as to what will the government be involved in the future. And how will they try to, you know, do a money grab from companies? And I guess then we're going to have to then move into the next cycle of who becomes president, and then how is that going to play out, I guess. But anyway, these Panama Papers, you've been following this, right?
Oh, yeah.
So for those of you that don't know, these Panama Papers, there was lawyers and attorneys in Panama that specialized in creating these special trusts for asset protection and for, I guess, hiding money, tax avoidance. And they created all these trusts, these very complex trusts. And I guess they were supposed to be secretive. And somehow, a million pages of documents got leaked. They call it leaked. Hacked? Yeah,
leaked.
How does this happen?
CIA.
The CIA?
Well, that's whatever. That's actually coming out now. There's a lot of people believe this to be the case. No, this hasn't been proven.
So the CIA goes in and somehow hacks their servers.
Well,
or
somebody does. We don't know the CIA. That's just a supposition that we use on the No Agenda show.
All right. Well, somebody goes in and hacks these documents, the servers, and then starts leaking them or exposing them, right? First of all, just the vast number of pages, a million pages. We're not talking about just a few documents here. That's a lot of digital documents.
It's 2.6 terabytes. And if anybody out there has ever tried to clean up their 1 terabyte drive that's full, this would take you a couple of years.
It's unbelievable.
If you can even do it. And so this actually happened in 2014, and it's been that long before they could get their act together enough to tell anybody.
The problem
is, careful they didn't get caught, they didn't get killed. There's all these issues that you had to deal with not to let anyone know what was going on for a while.
Well, but the biggest problem is that it seems that many of the players that got these trusts or these offshore accounts set up and all this were some very important politicians and celebs and other higher-ups.
Yeah.
Doing things they shouldn't. For example, in Iceland, the prime minister resigned last week after he was found to have some secret offshore account.
Right.
And the big question is, why would the president of Iceland be trying to hide money, not to pay taxes, back to Iceland? And what else? Well, and where did he get the money from?
Well, all those questions get asked eventually.
The question is how much of how many senators, how many others? Because that really, we haven't seen any in the U.S. really named, right? Not too many.
Well, they don't think that too many Americans use the services of that particular firm.
Okay.
Which they, also kind of, you know, is it was designed to embarrass a bunch of, I don't know, certain politicians. We haven't deconstructed it enough to really have a solid, you know, well, this is why it was done and it was aimed at this guy and that guy. And I don't know.
I know they
embarrass Putin.
I would venture to say that there's going to be a lot of embarrassment. And when and if these names all come out, there could be some real ramifications for some heavy hitters.
I'm still under the theory that if these guys don't have the account, somebody, one of these other outfits will, and they'll get busted, that the Bernie Madoff money is going to be found.
Oh, that'd be interesting. You know, already what we're finding is that there's a scapegoat in all this. There's a finger pointing going on. The banks.
Yeah.
The banks are being looked into as to why did they let this happen? Why did they open up, allow?
Well, the banks are the ones who set these up through these guys, but it's mostly foreign banks. It's Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, HBA, whatever it is, UBS, those guys. And American banks aren't involved, it seems. They use somebody else.
Right. So now they'll be in trouble for this. And the probability is that they'll go after the banks for this to try to avert their attention to them, to themselves. It's just going to be a mess. Anyway, could be interesting. Is it going to have major financial implications? I mean, I think the average person probably isn't going to care. You know, it's not going to be, you know, where they should possibly care or what their government officials are doing with the money and how they get that and what did they do to, quote unquote, earn that money. But we'll see.
Well, it's not being played very well in the United States. I mean, the financial people might be talking about it, but the general news guys aren't.
Not at all. Not at all.
Europe, yes.
Yep. So I guess we have to bid adieu to privacy in some regards. Not that we ever really had any, it seems, but it's getting worse. I guess the more technology we have and the more that we have like GPS and various smartphones, things like that, the less privacy we have. The latest thing is, I thought this was unbelievable. Uber is releasing its first ever transparency report detailing the information requested by not only U.S. law enforcement agencies, but also regulators. They're releasing information about between July and December 2015 on 12 million riders and drivers to various U.S. agencies. So basically, because of course you have to sign up for Uber to use Uber, they have your name and your information. And they have your tracks where you went, right? The, you know, where you, what particular stops you made, et cetera. And
yeah, it'll all be in the database. You don't even have to do any research, really.
Yep. And that's all 12 million riders. Their information is being released to various U.S. agencies and law enforcement agencies. What do you think of that? I think that's pretty awful.
I don't know what to think of it. The way I always see it, if they're releasing stuff like this, is going to go to advertisers eventually.
Well, I mean, I just think that, you know, one thing after the next already, you know, everybody knows everything about you on Facebook with the check-ins and the wherever else.
Luckily I don't have a Facebook account.
Yeah. So I don't know what everybody else thinks about that out there, but it makes me kind of, listen, obviously.
Especially if you're in the business of doing deals or something, this could be used as blackmail.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if somebody is, hopefully you're a smart enough criminal. If you're actually going to rob a convenience store, you're not going to take an Uber there. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, a lot of times, what if somebody, I mean, I don't think a CEO would necessarily, I mean, who knows, but necessarily use an Uber to go to a location that can be then found. Hey, why is that guy going to that company? Are they talking about some deal?
No, I wouldn't think so either. Or go to meet his mistress.
Yeah. Hopefully people are, but most people are not smart enough, let's be honest. They didn't think that anything could be released, you know, be anonymous. There should be an anonymous setting on Uber. Say, hey, I want to remain anonymous. My information, you know, I don't want it released. I don't think there's anything in the app that does that.
No, not yet.
That I'm aware of. So negative rates The effect of negative rates is still being felt. Japanese loan growth slowed to the weakest pace in 3 years in March. This is even with the negative rates, with them trying to push this, with them trying to provide extra incentive for banks to loan and pushing rates so low that the banks have to take their money out of the deposit and do something with it. Meanwhile, the loan growth is at the lowest point in 3 years. Three years. It's unbelievable. So I guess they'll just keep on doing what doesn't work if we know Japan and keep on trying to push rates even lower. Let's see. Technology, on the technology front, I don't think this is a surprise, but continuing downtrend of quarterly shipments of PCs. Quarterly shipments fell 9.5%. Six consecutive quarterly decline.
Well, it sounds like a recession.
Yeah. Let's see here. Okay. Ah, this is interesting. So something new that we recently started to find more information about is something called unfunded energy loans. And these are loans that are available, but maybe not used.
Well, that doesn't sound like some sort of scam waiting to happen, just the term.
Yeah, unfunded loans. This is basically money that has been available or but not tapped. At least we don't know how much has been tapped by banks. Money that they have potentially available in credit lines. And
I wonder how they handle that on the bookkeeping side of things.
Well, that's the problem. This is almost like equity credit lines in the day, where there was all that same thing, where there was all this equity in a house and the credit lines that maybe were allowed to be given. And then people maybe took it, maybe didn't, but you had to put how much was out there. That's why the banks over the years have really cut back on those equity credit lines and loans. So about $147 billion of unfunded loans have been disclosed by 10 of the largest U.S. banks. There's a little table in there. The biggest one is Citigroup. About $20 billion is funded. A total of another $40 billion is unfunded, not used. But we don't know. We don't know if, in fact, the latest information, because they've been hemorrhaging so badly, these energy companies have tapped any of this, or if they're going to tap any of this. And if they are, how much of a risk is that to the banks? So we're going to see maybe in this next quarter's earnings announcements, if they actually, which they probably won't, this will be a footnote somewhere, come out and discuss, you know, the risk that they're on the hook for.
Hmm. It sounds like something that's not going to be turn out well.
No. But, you know, again, they could probably go in and renegotiate it, cut it back. But this is something that hasn't been, you know, discussed at all. But as companies need more and more money to operate because oil prices are so low, that they're going to, you know, possibly go after this money. And if it's available to them, obviously they could just, you know, take it out and put it on the side into their, you know, operating account. Let's see. Brazil.
Huh. Yes, Brazil.
Rousseff, on charges of manipulating public finances, is facing an impeachment. Actually, I guess the committee voted to recommend now a Senate trial. It looks like she's going down the road of impeachment, and it looks like Brazil's kind of happy about it. Their market is probably one of the best markets, after being one of the worst markets in a couple of years, last couple of years, one of the best markets this year, and it has something to do with oil and Petrobras. But what a disaster that country. It's just one thing after the next. And Latin America, you know, why is it that Latin America, it seems that there is a constant level of political malfeasance. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that, and I've always been fascinated by it.
Is this part of the culture or something, or is it just...
I have no idea. It must be part of the culture. You're just never ending.
It is never. Argentina, Venezuela, I mean, just Colombia, just doesn't end.
Yeah, it just never ends.
Yeah. So, two things I want to bring up in a moment, but there's something that, what's wrong with people, I guess, is the big question, right? So, there was an airliner flying from Hawaii to Japan. It was forced to turn back and land in Honolulu. after a passenger insisted on doing yoga in the galley, even though the crew said, hey, you can't do this.
What?
I'm telling you.
The last story I heard about the turn back was that one where they're running out of fuel going to San Francisco or L.A.
This is fun. Doing yoga in the galley is not allowed when they say you can't do it. So I don't know if she was standing on her head or, you know, in the crane position or in the whatever it was, but there wasn't enough room anywhere else, so she went to the galley. Crew said, hey, can't do this. This is not allowed. She said, I'm sorry. I have to do my yoga. And it got to the FBI. Got to turn back because somebody doing yoga. Amazing.
Oh, they should have. Somebody should have just beaten, or the whole plane should have gotten and beaten up the woman.
Just hogtied her and throw her in the bathroom. I mean, it's a long flight. Long flight from Hawaii to Japan. Maybe they didn't want all that going on. New craze out there, or maybe it's a growing craze. Seems like color. Now, I've heard this, by the way. This is something that I've seen, that adult coloring books are really hot.
Yes, we've talked about this on the No Agenda show. My wife is into them. My daughter is into them. It's a lot of women doing these. They're pretty cool when they finish them, by the way.
Is it like a paint-by-numbers kind of thing?
No, that's what the art has, a similar quality to it when they're finished. But it's a very intricate. It's not like a coloring book where there's a picture of, you know, a straw man, you know, and some simplistic thing. It's very detailed and difficult. And I have to say, Adam has, we have this thing, we discuss these things that are analogs of social things that took place during the Depression, since we're in a Depression era. And Adam pointed out that these coloring books were analogs of what was going on in the 30s, needlepoint.
Oh, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was just about to ask you about that. Is this the modern-day needlepoint? That's so funny. Needlepoint, yeah.
It keeps you busy. It's meditative. It's a good thing that they were using. We were on the flight back and forth to New York. The two of them were doing coloring, doing the whole flight. And it keeps you busy, and it's interesting, and you get something out of it when you're done. Real pretty kind of artworks. And,
They're using coloring pencils. They use pencils now, right? Not crayons.
Well, actually, my daughter uses these very fine pointed kind of a pen. She has a whole collection of these colored pens. And they're perfect for these things.
If any of our listeners have done some really cool coloring books or coloring projects with coloring books, snap a picture.
Yeah.
And send it on over to us. I think I'd like to see some of these things look
anyway,
like.
Anyway, it caught me off guard.
Oh, really?
I mean, I didn't. Who could have predicted that this would have been a big thing?
I mean, needlepoint, I guess, went by the way. Rosie Grier was very famous for doing needlepoint.
It's a football guy?
Yeah.
Huh.
You didn't know that? Rosie Grier was big on needlepoint. But yeah, I mean that took a lot more. It was just up and down and up and down and up and down tie.
Yeah, it's a form of meditation the way I see it.
That's exactly what it is. So, but I'd like to see what this looks like.
Oh, some of the stuff's dynamite.
I'd like to see it. All right, or at least point me in the direction where we can find some of the stuff. All right, I need to ask you some questions. This is definitely your area of expertise. What do they call them? Bots? These chat bots.
Chat bots.
So Microsoft put up some, I don't know why in the world they feel like they need to do this, but they put up some kind of chat bot, an artificial intelligence.
Yeah, an AI bot.
On Twitter, which was taken down because it spewed racist and sexist comments.
They got carried away. Right, okay. I think it was hacked. I've written about it. I think it was hacked by some insider, and it wasn't learning anything to do this. Other people say, no, that's what it learned. It went on Twitter and all it saw was bad behavior and it mimicked it.
Well, they took it down.
Yeah.
And they put it back up.
Did they?
They put it back up. And then on Wednesday, it launched a spam attack on its followers.
Oh, this is when it was doing all the,
It went back on. So it went off because it was taken off for this bad behavior with racism and sexist comments. They fixed whatever they did. And then they it briefly rejoined Twitter on I guess last Wednesday, only to do a spam attack on his followers. I guess they took it down again.
Yeah.
Now, the news today is that Facebook is building a chatbot. Can you please explain to me what the hell we need these chatbots for? Is it for a replacement for support? I can get that. It's like a, you know, you ask a question, it can just respond back with an answer.
You're assuming that they want to do an expert system, which is what you're talking about when you say that. A learning expert system might be kind of interesting. To be honest about it, I think it's just some sort of a fad. And there's a whole bunch of new apps that have come out. I've noticed this. I was looking around at stuff, and there's a bunch of these little bots you can buy, or you can program, or you can get for free. Some of them come on the phone, and you can set them up so you can be fronted by one of these bots. If you like to go to chat rooms, you can have the bot pose as you and continue a conversation. And
I don't understand. There must be something. Microsoft is making it
about having a. It's like having your personal. It's like having a servant. That's free.
but why is Facebook and Microsoft? Why are they building these things? I mean, why is Facebook? This is a big, big announcement that they're creating these chatbots. Is it to gather information? Is it possibly to friend? I mean, are you going to friend a chatbot, or is it that you don't know it's a chatbot?
Theoretically, you're not supposed to know, but you can spot these things a mile away. I've never seen a chatbot that I can't identify within five or six, interactions.
I just don't understand the business application of this at this point. I just don't understand why you'd have it on Twitter. Like I said, I could understand it for a support vehicle, for replacing support personnel. But just to try to mimic an individual and go on Twitter, the whole thing is silly. I mean, okay. Why would I follow a chatbot on Twitter?
I think you wouldn't.
I obviously wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, just the whole thing seems to be.
I
this
think
whole
it might
AI
be
thing.
Silly. You might be right. You might have nailed it.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. Okay. And finally, in the news items, before we get to the stocks and a few things related to that, in New York, there is potential legislation that is going to become, or at least it's going to be posed, and I guess eventually voted on, to have roadside checks after accidents to see if a driver was texting.
Mm.
So now if you're driving down the road,
I thought they were doing that already.
I guess there's no requirement. There's no, I mean, it's one, it is, if you are weaving, and I guess if they suspect you of drinking or under the influence, they can, there's mandatory tests you have to take, or maybe they'll take you to jail. Right.
Yeah.
But I don't think if you don't hand over your phone, and then by the way, if you do hand over your phone, how are they going to, what are they going to know? You can't see anything, right? It's possible they were on, not. Well, I guess this law is going to require drivers that are involved in accidents to submit their phone to roadside testing from a textilizer to determine whether the driver was using a mobile phone ahead of the crash.
Yeah. I don't think it's that hard to do.
But what's going to qualify? Is it, okay, you can't text. Can you talk on the phone? You talk on the phone, right?
No.
You can't be talking on the phone when you're driving?
No.
Why not?
You have to have hands free.
Not in Florida.
Really?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, then Florida is different.
So it's hands free requirement in New York. And texting is out of the question. Obviously, browsing, tweeting, Facebooking, that's out of the question, obviously.
I would hope.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be. So somehow they're going to figure out, they have to know the exact instance of when the accident happened, right? It has to be exact. I mean, if you were texting five minutes beforehand.
No, that's not true.
Why?
And I think if you were texting like a few minutes before the accident, I think you're still going to be found guilty. You're not supposed to be texting at all. I think I think they're going to just work with the phone company, see what the hell is going on, because it's got to go over the network. So you know what the guy's, if he's active, if he's doing anything. He's doing stuff. He stops doing stuff because there's a wreck. I think it'd be pretty obvious if you looked at the data.
Mm. Well, again, back to the main thesis here of this show. Two things. First of all, the idea that now the ability to be invisible out there and to do things without being followed and all that is shut down due to all sorts of privacy issues. And it doesn't really matter anymore because we're just going to have chatbots as friends anyway. And what if the chatbot started texting me in the middle of me driving? I didn't do anything. Just starts chatting and texting people. I have a chatbot in my system. It just decides at 8 o'clock it's going to start texting.
Oh, that's going to be a great legal defense.
Yeah, it was my chatbot. It wasn't me.
You know, it might be something to think about
I'm going to have my chatbot get my Uber car. And then it won't be proven whether I was actually in it or not.
Yeah, you have to pay for it.
I'll pay for it. Yeah, well, the chatbots don't have money, right? But I'll pay for it. But I'll just say it was hacked. Somebody hacked it. Look at the chatbot ordered some car.
What are you using these Ubers for?
I'm just saying, if I did. Crazy stuff. All right, let's get to the stocks. By the way, you can check this out, of course, on dhunplugged.com. There is a weekly stocks pick little button there that you can click on and find out all about the performance of the various stocks that we talk about. Of course, this is just a game that we play. John and I pick a stock or two or three, short or long, for different reasons. We have our reasons that sometimes work out very well, sometimes don't. And we track them. We have certain stops. This is not an offer to buy or sell any security. Of course, if it is something that you think is interesting, do your own homework on it. Don't rely on us for anything because we take no responsibility. But just a note, we also will let you know and disclose if John, myself, or clients of Horowitz & Company have positions. And this way you know that, you know, we're not trying to just pump and dump or anything like that. So you can go over there and check it out and track what's going on there. Not many names left on the list. You got stopped out of your Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, I see that. I made money.
Yep, you made money. But your big winner, Southwest Airlines, doing very well, up 19%, which is very good, considering the fact that I had a stock, Spirit Airlines, that was stopped out pretty much right away. During the exact same time we bought them, and Southwest is up that much more. By the way, did you see that it did turn out that Alaska Air did buy Virgin America?
Yeah, we flew to New York and back on Virgin.
How was that?
Cheap seats. What do you mean?
How was the flight? How was the plane? How was the staff?
It was good. It was fine. I talked to the staff about this buyout. And to a man, they all thought it was great. So I said, why? I don't even like Alaskan. They said because they have a much better contract for the employees at Alaskan. We got a union or something.
Yeah, it's all about me.
No protection at Virgin.
Right. All about me. Me.
Yep.
All right. Well, Restoration Hardware up 15%, which is good. That was that short squeeze after earnings. Earnings didn't come out so good, by the way, but did work out. Still short Japan. It's up a little bit higher. It was up 3% today on the big move on oil, and everybody's happy that oil's moving up. And so the world is just doing so well because we see a big bump in oil, even though, by the way, we'll talk about this in a second, even though we saw the news or the rumor about Saudi Arabia and Russia, a pretty good drawdown last week. This week's API numbers that came out after the close today showed a 6.5 million barrel build. Enormous for the API numbers on a Tuesday night. So Tomorrow morning, we'll see what happens. Twitter was stopped out, the 50 cent stock. And just to let you know, I'm going to go long Twitter.
Yes, I'm seeing this.
Yep.
I got bumped.
Yep. Freeport-McMoRan short was profitable by about 7%, but it was stopped out. Demandware up about 1.5%. Insider buying, you like that. I'm going to be adding something with a very long name. It's I should probably have a much larger stop in here, but I figure for the game, might as well have something that can move pretty good, right? Something that's exciting. And there's two different...
I try that constantly. Never works.
Well, we're going to pick up the DWTI, which is the Velocity Shares, 3-time. I think we did this once before. Inverse crude. So this is basically 3 times short crude. So we're Oil was up, 3.5% or so today.
You're shorting crude at 41.60.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to multiply itself. You think it's going to be near term?
Yeah.
A recollapse of the oil prices.
Correct. Maybe not a collapse, but it'll, move down. It's kind of
a collapse. It went up 19%. If it goes back down 19%, it's kind of a collapse.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Even if it goes down 10%, this will be a 30% winner.
Yeah.
I got a 15% stop. Inventory is still building. And I'm going to go long Twitter. Reason being, I just figure if one thing goes right with Twitter, just one thing, and maybe they just got that NFL deal, which I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but it's interesting. Thursday nights, they're going to be streaming NFL. Maybe they get some more users. Maybe they bring up their monthly active users. Maybe they'll get some possible advertising opportunities. So if one thing goes right here, we can see a nice little move on this because there's so many people on the short side.
So there's no real reason.
I have absolutely no reason. My reason and my thesis is just one thing right.
Yeah.
Just one. Maybe they'll get rid of...
anything's possible.
Maybe they'll get a new CEO, a full-time CEO. Maybe they'll do some cost-cutting. Maybe they'll... they did do a few things I thought were interesting. That the GIFs and the videos that are able to be uploaded now, I think that's pretty cool. So, but they're going to be in a fight to the death with Facebook and the other messengers. So there you go.
I have one.
Okay, what do you have?
And I know that you're going to laugh.
Oh.
Because I've done this one. I think I've tried this before, but this is damn CEO. He keeps buying this stock.
Which one?
SHLD.
SHLD, that's Sears.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yes. You're talking about Lampert?
This is the... Exactly.
Yeah, Eddie Lampert. He's gonna either be like one day...
He's broke.
Yeah, I mean...
He's taking me with him.
He actually paid off some loans with them. I mean, it's amazing.
Sears Holding Corporation.
CEO.
Which means there's probably some fancy bookkeeping going on as we speak.
I've been in a few Sears recently, and we know the story about it. The service is terrible. There's nobody in the store. Maybe they have something else going on. The land value used to be the big thing for Sears. That collapsed. Kmart, the same thing.
No good.
But Sears has not only have to reinvent itself, it needs to, I don't know. I mean, it's
very poorly managed.
Very poorly managed. I mean, it's just everything. It used to be the place you go for tools. That's not even good anymore. Tools are
Craftsman.
So overpriced their tools.
Yeah, well. Yeah, might as well just buy Snap-on, which is really expensive.
Milwaukee. The Milwaukee power gear is really expensive. The drills and all that.
This would be my last. I'm not touching Sears again after this.
Okay. All right. So we got a thesis of CEO buying. Got a 10% stop on it? Or is it trading at $14.95?
No more than that.
All right. Well, again, everybody can check these out over on DH Unplugged. You can follow John on Twitter at TheRealDvorak. You can listen to him on the No Agenda Show, which I got to tell you something. If you haven't had the opportunity to listen to the No Agenda Show, you're missing just a terrific, about an hour-ish, maybe sometimes more, of commentary.
2 hours and 45 minutes.
What was that? That's a long one.
That's the targeted length of the show.
What happened to the other 15 on the other side?
What other side?
Well, you could go. Why didn't you go to 3? 245.
There's a lot of reasons. One, we tend to almost hit 3. We've been trying to keep it a little tighter, and so we targeted 245. We think 3 is too long.
So 245 is the number. And I got to tell you, it's very entertaining. Very entertaining.
Last show was 248. Anyway, yes?
Yeah, you're very entertaining.
Show has been, over the last 2 or 3 months, has been outstanding, show after show.
Yep. By the way, there's a new podcast awards. Did you get that email?
No.
I got to forward it to you. There's a whole new way they're doing the podcast awards.
Oh, really? What are they going to do this time?
I'm not quite sure, but it's something different. And there's like a $10 now submission fee. And I guess they're not making any money. They're not getting advertisers. I don't know what the deal is. But I know Adam was at the awards last year.
Yes.
And usually the disciplined investor's up there. No agenda's up there. DH gets a nomination, but we never win.
No.
But we got to maybe find another category. Exercise. We're in the exercise and fitness category now. We'll win that. We talk about food. We talk about things. Anyway, you can check out, of course, No Agenda, the No Agenda Show over on either iTunes or No Agenda Stream. noagendashow.com or just find it anywhere that you look. Just type in No Agenda Show. You could also listen to Disciplined Investor each and every week that we have various guests.
Another outstanding show.
Thank you. We keep it fresh.
It's done, and you know, it's the old-fashioned style where you got somebody you talk to.
Right. Exactly. This week, we have a new guest. It's a chatbot financial guy, and I'm going to talk to him.
Is a chatbot guy?
I figure I might as well bring on a chatbot, right?
Yeah, talk to the chatbot.
I can talk to the chatbot.
And then we do this.
And of course, check out DH Unplugged, all the different things to see. Close to the Pin competition we give away. By the way, the winners get a fabulous, fabulous DH Unplugged shirt, T-shirt. You got to have
collectible.
One. All the craze. Anyway, well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. And I will see you, John, next week.
Okay, see you then.
All right.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.